Ken Knight, Reel One. So if I could ask you, first of all, Ken, you know, could you tell me something about your background before the war, where you were born and brought up?
I'm a Norfolk man. I was born in Norfolk. My father was up on the old Great Eastern. We moved to London when the LNER was formed. So therefore, we moved to Essex, and I spent most of my pre-war life in Essex, went to school in Romford. I worked for the local authority, which was an urban district council. Then it became a borough, and I participated in the festivities for that, which was nice. And then I went into the army in September 1940. I was called up, and I went directly into the RAMC. Subsequently, there were people went into the General Service Corps, or whatever it was called, and did basic training. But when I went, and when Jim Wheeler went and the others, we went direct into the corps that we were to serve in. So I was called up in 1940.
Is that what you wanted to do? You know, did you have any preference at the
time?
No,
I didn't. I didn't particularly want to be Navy, and I wasn't sure that I could cope with RAF, so I think Army was probably the thing that I was destined for.
Yeah, so how about the shock of going in the Army? You know, what was that early training like?
Well, that was, as you said, it was a shock. Living in Romford as we did, there'd been a lot of damage with air raids and so on, and I began to feel that I went to Aldershot. I began to feel it was probably quieter there than it had been at home. But the service training was difficult, and you know, the usual sort of drill sergeants embarked and so on, but once you got to know them, they were reasonable fellows. And I think I survived it as well as most.
Yes, did you go on then to further training after sort of an initial bout? Anything sort of specialised at all?
No, because of my background in local government, I was scheduled to become a clerk in the army, and I went on training for various grades of clerk at different times, and eventually became a clerk one, as they called it. And really, that was the nature of the special training initially.
What sort of postings did you have, you know, before the invasion?
Well, I was posted first to an EMS hospital, an Emergency Medical Service Hospital, in Hertfordshire. I was in Ashridge Park, and I was there for a year, and was fortunate to be in civvy billets rather than in a camp, which was delightful. And it was a shock to be moved away from there, although one, of course, expected to be. And then I went to a general hospital, a military general hospital, which was the headquarters. That was at Colchester, and I was eventually posted to another one in Yorkshire, and spent some time training in Leeds, in the Leeds area. There I fractured an ankle when I was on an assault course, and went into a hospital, and I think it was that really that directed me towards Second Army rather than Japan, because I think a lot of the other people that are there with me were on draft eventually to Japan or the Far East. So in a way, breaking my ankle, I thought, on reflection, was perhaps a fortunate thing.
This sort of training you were doing and the assault course, was that in preparation for, you know, either overseas, Japan, or Europe?
It was either for the Far East or for Europe, there's no doubt about that. Sort of a general toughening up process,
And were you having to learn anything medical with your work?
The basic training at Aldershot was included, of course, the basic medical stuff. There was a lot of that. Although I wasn't designated a nursing orderly as such, we did have to learn the basic first aid and all that kind of thing. Oh yes, I should have mentioned that. Yes.
Yes. If you wouldn't mind me going back, right. Because it's interesting something you said earlier, which I would like to pick up. The fact that you were in Essex,
right.
And it seems you would have been there during the big blitz.
We were there, during the early stages of the Blitz. It actually it started badly, I think, at the end of August in 1940. So I only experienced a short period, but my last Saturday at home was when the docks in East London were really set on fire. And I can remember that very vividly. I can remember that. I was actually out. I was out at a party, but I can remember breaking off and watching the flames and so on and hearing these planes. That really was a dreadful day. And then on the following Thursday, of course, I was in the army. I knew on that Saturday that I'd got to go on the Thursday, but that was, as it were, my last weekend at home, which was shoving. But again, we survived.
Right, so could I ask you now about your experience of the invasion?
Right.
You know, first of all, when were you aware that Europe was going to be invaded, that France would be invaded?
Oh, well, I think probably from what Churchill and others have said 2 years before, that we were preparing, weren't we, for the invasion, Operation Overlord or whatever, and it was just a case of making sure that it wasn't done before everything was ready. And this, of course, was one of the blessings of having people like Churchill and Montgomery and Eisenhower, who were determined that we shouldn't go across until things were ready, rather like the four chaps who went across in the First World War, just in droves.
And was there any special preparation, you know, which made you feel it was imminent?
Oh yes, because after I'd left Leeds, the holding depot at Leeds, I was posted to the 11th Light Field Ambulance. And it was obvious that we were going to have something special because we moved down to Suffolk and did a lot of training in Aldborough with tanks of various kinds, with the flails and tanks that could swim and so on, you know, with 27th Armoured Brigade. And so it was quite obvious then, a year beforehand, or perhaps 9 months beforehand, that that there would be the invasion about the summer of 1944.
And as for the hospital, you know, what were sort of special preparations made on a medical front, did you find?
Well, with the Light Field Ambulance, the duty of a Light Field Ambulance is to be right up the front and really to pick up casualties and take them back with the minimum of treatment, basically. So there wasn't the need in a Light Field Ambulance for concentrated medical attention as it would have been perhaps in a field hospital. The Light Field Ambulance is the forward medical unit of all, and really is just concerned with picking up casualties, giving them some form of basic treatment, and then evacuating them back behind the lines. So we didn't have a lot of highly concentrated medical training. No, we didn't.
During your training, you know, at the EMS and other places, and of course when you were actually in a field ambulance, did you ever work with conscientious objectors?
I can't actually recall doing so until we were in Belsen, and then there were a group of people who were Quakers, and they are conscientious objectors, I believe, aren't they? But I wasn't aware of actually working before that with conscientious objectors.
So when did you actually go over to Normandy?
I actually went on D-Day plus one. Some had been one or two. The unit was divided into four sections, attached to different companies of tanks. One section went over, I think, on D-Day minus a few hours, but the main body of our unit went over on D plus one, left on D plus one, from Southsea.
Well, what was that like? You know, first of all, the mustering, the embarkation.
Well, we spent a long time in Petworth Park, in the concentration camp. The Germans actually made use of that word. It was a concentration area. And they said, well, you've got concentration areas in England. So we were there for some considerable time, and then we moved off in, I think, some trepidation, but also some feeling, well, this is it, this is what we've come for, now we're getting on. But it was a bit frightening.
Mm-hmm. Where did you set off from? You know, having been based in Petworth Park, port?
We went from Southsea. We went down from Petworth down to, I'm sure it was Southsea, yes. And we went across in LCT, landing craft tanks. Well, at least I think it was LCT. Certainly the tanks would have been, wouldn't they? And I think we were also in it, but I'm not too sure there.
What sort of journey did you have? You know,
It wasn't bad. In actual fact, one or two of the sections that went later had a rougher time than we did, because the storm, which had been threatened, appeared, I think, on about D plus 4 or 5. So our crossing was actually not too bad. And in fact, the landing in France was probably not as bad as it might have been, because we were actually over there before the Germans had actually had time to regroup. And I think people going over a few days later had a much more difficult landing than we did. But, I mean, other people may tell a different story. It just depends on which beach you landed and what was happening.
How about your beach? What was that like as you approached it?
We were at Wistrom, Gold, I think it was, and it really was frightening. There was very little left. Houses were demolished. It wasn't a bright day. The omens didn't appear to be too good, but I got by, and most of my colleagues got by very well.
What was the scene like, you know, on the beach as you the scene of the beach?
Oh,
you know,
yes,
was
yes.
there a lot of devastation?
Yes, there was congestion, and a lot of there really were a lot of troops. All with their designated area to go to. There was a beach master, of course, who was in charge of sections of beaches. And I subsequently discovered, when I went to work in one of the associations in London, that the beachmaster turned out to be a former, a later governor of mine, McCall, who came from Winchester. So that was we could reminisce quite a little bit about that.
And so, what were your movements, you know, having got ashore?
Well, we grouped up with the brigade, or section of the brigade, spent the first night, I think, digging in behind, I can remember, behind a church wall, and then moved off in the morning in support of the tanks. I can remember spending some time in cornfields, and in orchards, avenues of trees and so on, which anywhere for cover. But for some considerable time, it seemed reasonably peaceful, and it was quite pleasant summer days, I can remember, early on in the invasion, in our section anyway. And then we got to Caen, and then we moved on with the 27th Armour Brigade through the areas of Normandy to Beni Bocage country, which was very attractive country. We got by, I think.
But how about the, you know, it was very fierce fighting, wasn't there, for Kong?
There was fierce fighting.
So
yes.
How about your casualties? Were you getting many?
There were casualties, yes. There were quite a considerable number of casualties. I can't remember specifically whether there were days that were busier than others, but I think, you know, obviously when battles were on, then clearly we had more casualties to deal with.
And how was this system working, you know, which you described earlier, your role as a field ambulance,
right.
being in, could
yes.
you explain how that was sort of working at this
well,
time?
We would pick up the casualties from the area, give them field dressings or whatever was necessary, and then evacuate them back so that they could either be in a hospital somewhere in northern France, or more than likely evacuated back to England.
Did you have any problems with the roads at that stage? You know, you were talking about the
Bocage. Congestion, but again, I think that the control exercise by the military police and the service corps and so on was admirable, and I don't recall my personally any great difficulties in that respect. We obviously spent more time in some areas, I think, than was contemplated, but I think the congestion on the roads was bad. But it was reasonably well smoothed out, as far as we were concerned, by the police or whatever.
How about the Red Cross? Were you using that on your vehicles?
Oh yes, all the vehicles were. All the ambulances had big Red Crosses on, and of course they also had the star, the white star of the 21 Army Group, or the whole of the invasion group.
And was that observed by, you know, enemy aircraft or artillery, the Red Cross? Did they respect it?
I think mostly they did. They didn't, of course, when we were in Belsen. Although we had this huge Red Cross in the field, we were in fact strafed one morning. But I think by and large, the Red Cross was respected in the early stages. Maybe because, in fact, some of the people that were treated were, of course, Germans.
Did you make any distinction between Germans and Allies, you know?
Well, we tried not to. We tried not to. But I think it's probably fair to say that if there were a couple of Germans in an ambulance going somewhere, they may have got a rather rough ride than been to Canadians or British. I have to say that, I think. And equally, it would be the same if some of our chaps had been picked up by the Germans. In fact, they might have been shot like that.
But they were looked after,
were
they?
Yes. And sent back to there, or taken prisoner and sent back eventually.
Your little unit, you know, this the unit you belong to, yeah. Was it a sort of close, were you all sort of...
Oh, it was lovely. It was lovely is a silly word, but it was a very gentle and friendly unit. We got on extremely well. There were only 128 of us, and it really was extremely good unit to be with. In fact, after the war, I and Jim Wheeler organised reunions, and I think we had about 16 or 17. And people came from all over the place back for a reunion, which was nice. It was a very pleasant, you know, if one had to be in the army and a soldier and so on, then I can't think of a better way to do it, frankly.
How were you treated by the civilians you came into contact with, if indeed you did, Ken?
Well, we didn't come across too many because we were rather forward, and the civilians seemed to have disappeared or kept inside. But I can remember a farmer in where one place where we were bivouacked was gave us killed a goose, which the cook did for us. No, I think they looked after as well. In Germany, of course, it was a bit different. We were always a bit suspicious of them, and they had no doubt of us. But I think for civilians, by and large, were pleased to see us. After all, we were helping to free them, despite the fact that some of their towns and so on had got extremely knocked them out. Therefore.
I wonder what it felt like, you know, to actually have liberated that part of France. Was it a good feeling for you all?
Yes, I think so. I think the British Tommy, including me, is a little bit, perhaps a little bit cynical over this, you know. we were freeing them, but equally we were, I suppose, losing a little bit of our freedom because we got to do as we were told. But no, I think it was it was a nice feeling to be part of the invasion and part of the relief of these countries from persecution, which was very important.
Mm-hmm. Yes, did you know much about sort of Nazi Germany and fascism at that time, do you think?
I don't think we knew how bad it was. We had, in fact, had little booklets about going to France and going to Germany and the background to Nazism and fascism. And we had lectures about what was going on, but it was still a shock to discover some of the things that did happen, particularly in Germany, or in fact in the occupied countries. I mean, Holland suffered extremely badly, and they had no time at all. I can remember the Dutch families had no time at all for the Germans, and I believe to say that some of them even now don't.
So where did you go, you know, in your advance? What sort of route, if you could tell me the areas you went through until you were called to Belsen?
Well, I happen to keep a little note of the places we went to, and if I may, I'll read them. I mentioned we landed at Wistrum, then we went on to Herrenwiel, St. Honorine de Lucie, Balleroy and Caumont. I think it was at Caumont that it was where the farmer killed the goose for us, which was lovely. Then we went on to Courtrai, La Graffière and Tenspray and Landisac. We were at Landisac for about a fortnight, I think, and that was very pleasant. Then in September we were at Orme and Louviers for another fortnight. In October the 1st, we moved into Holland and spent 7 or 8 weeks in Hazer, which was lovely. I remember we were billeted in a school, got on extremely well with the Dutch people, and it was a very pleasant 7 or 8 weeks. Then we were in Rockholt. And in 1945, in January, we moved into Belgium. The first place we went to was Bilsen, and then Munster, Bilsen, and on to Tilburg. I remember there were a lovely family in Tilburg. The husband was an income tax inspector, and they all had to carry their passes, and most of the family had purposely, most of the male members of the family had purposely blotted ink on the cover of their identity card, so it looked as if they were having a beard. And if that was picked up by the Germans and said, you know, where's the beard, they would apologise for the fact that there was ink. They were a lovely family. I remember also that they had on Saturdays and Sundays, if we were lucky enough to be invited, they would have a small service, perhaps 5 minutes, and reading from their books and Bibles. Then we went on to Helmond and Lanklaar. That was before we moved into Germany on March the 20th.
Had you heard anything of Arnhem?
Had we heard anything by then? I can't remember quite when Arnhem was.
That would have been September, wouldn't September. It? 44. Mm. Did you hear about it?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, we did. Yes. That, of course, was a mixed blessing, wasn't it, actually? Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, with all the places you've described, you know, what sort of activity? Were there many operations, much fighting?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. In most of these places, it was a matter of supporting the tanks, which we were 27th Armoured Brigade, and at some time we became part of 6th Guards Division, and I can't quite remember exactly when that was, but the 27th Armoured Brigade was independent, and then became part of or worked with the 6th Armoured Brigade.
How about the casualty situation? You know, how were you coping with that as the supply lines were sort of getting longer? You know, the lines from the base.
I think because of the basic operation of the night field ambulance, we didn't have too much of a problem. We worked closely with CCS's casualty clearing stations, who were able to give a bit more medical treatment to casualties. There were fluctuations in the number of casualties, of course, depending on the state of the battles. But I think by and large we managed to cope quite adequately with them.
Do you remember any particular risky situations? You know, your own baptism of fire, for instance. Were there, you know, times when you came pretty close to the fighting?
Yeah, we were moving. I can't remember quite where we were moving from and to, but we were travelling overnight, I remember, and we were in the midst of some very heavy fighting, and I can recall that the next day or the day or two afterwards, the colonel received an apology, a friendly apology from the brigadier that in fact we had managed to become so involved with the fighting. There would have been no point in a field ambulance being destroyed. So that's probably why I've been as much as anything.
And how about crossing rivers? You know, were you crossing rivers up until this period?
Yeah, I think mostly we were overland until the time came for us to prepare for the crossing of the Rhine.
Were you given any special training for that? You know, crossing the Rhine.
Oh yes, the brigade was taking part in the battles of Cleve and Cock, which I think were regarded as crucial at the time, and they were then obviously being designated to cross over the Rhine into Germany itself. And we were moved as a unit with the 27th Army Regiment to the banks of the Rhine, to the banks of the Maas, the River Maas, which was flowing rather like the Rhine. And we did our training then on the Maas. We had ducks, the mobile vehicles that could go on land and on in the water, and we had a number of exercises to remove casualties from the river back to some comparative safety, and there was a separate organisation set up under the Deputy Director of Medical Services to organise the evacuation of casualties from the what would be the crossing of the Rhine. So we had, as it were, exercises both during the day and during the night for some considerable time to make sure that when the time came to cross the Rhine, everything would go as well as it should have done.
Psychologically, was that an important thing?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, going into Germany from Holland was, you knew you were in Germany rather than Holland or Belgium, but going across the Rhine really was getting into Germany itself. That was something that I think we really did look forward to. You could really feel that that was an achievement once the Rhine had been crossed. And indeed, when the army came to attack the Rhine and cross the Rhine, it did go reasonably well, thanks to the intensive training that we'd all had.
Can you remember your own experience of actually getting over the Rhine?
Not specifically. I couldn't quote the dates and times, but I do remember going across in the wagon which we had, which in fact throughout the campaign has been our orderly room. And I can remember being going across with that with the fellows that worked with me in the airfield. And that was a great day.
And were there many casualties from your own part?
There were a lot of casualties, yes, there were a lot of casualties. And the evacuation went very smoothly.
Mm. Do you have many drowned people? People you had to resuscitate?
I can't specifically say. I don't think there were, to be honest. I don't think there were. I think the crossing, actual crossing, had gone reasonably smoothly. It was a nice day, and although the river was fast flowing as it always is, we had in fact the experiences that we'd had on the Maas had given us a good grounding as to what to expect.